Welcome back to the Let Me Take You Higher podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Villain. Today, we're diving headfirst into what may be the most critical conversation of our generation. I call it Cold War II, the Geneva Convention showdown with the Axis of Chaos, previously referred to as the Axis of Evil. But we're not going to get grandiose in this. We're just going to say it pretty much as it is. Chaos is chaos. It doesn't have to be evil chaos. But with this, guys, NATO and the United Nations are up against a volatile new alliance. Russia, China, North Korea, and of course Iran. As tensions rise worldwide, we face a troubling question. Can the Geneva Convention still stand? And what's at stake if it collapses? We'll break down the numbers, analyze the provocations, and discuss the potential responses. So buckle up. This is going to be a big one. And it won't be a World War III big one, but it could be close. On the next, Let Me Take You Higher. Hello and welcome back to Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Villain. And today, as always, we have our co-host, Gigi Luigi. We're going to be talking about something that's very, it's on the tiptoes and on the fingertips of the American psyche, but we just don't talk about it enough. And as a child of the 80s, I remember the Cold War drama that Reagan was sparking. Well, I don't say, I wouldn't say it's Reagan. It's not always about Reagan, but he was sparking this situation with Nikita Khrushchev in the 80s, and we dubbed it as the Cold War because we weren't actually physically fighting Russia, but we were kind of fighting Russia mentally, emotionally, subordinately. It just was there were no tanks in the ground, there were no boots in the Kremlin, but we called it a Cold War, guys. And I feel like, and I've talked to Gigi about this, and I think we both feel like we are now in a similar situation, but we're in a Cold War with at least four countries. So let me just start off by saying, you know, Gigi, are you there?
Of course I'm here. You know I'm here, buddy.
I know you're there, buddy. What do you feel about that? I mean, you're not necessarily a child of the 80s. You came in kind of the aftermath of the 80s when, you know, the Russian walls fell down and the Berlin Wall crumbled around 94. What's your take on this? What's the hot mic in your end on these four fronts we're fighting in this Cold War now?
Well, right now, tensions are high. I believe foreign relations have deteriorated across multiple boundaries, you know. Aren't we like threatening to pull out of NATO or something like that?
Well, that's a good question.
Wasn't that like a thing? Because like there's just so much happening in the world right now. It's kind of a lot to unpack. As we were talking before we got on air here, you know, Russia invading Ukraine.
Yes.
You know, North Korea is like, you know, upping their
I mean, wow.
Their nuclear production
of tension.
Yeah.
Why would we do that? You know, and I don't know if you know this, but North Korea they've been desperately trying to get an ICBM. And for you of those at home who don't know what an ICBM is, it's an intercontinental ballistic missile. And you would ask yourself, why would North Korea need an intercontinental ballistic missile? Well, there's a situation called MAD, mutually assured destruction. And it's what's kept us all, nuclear powers, at bay from provocation. So North Korea has never been, or never was, in Kim Jong-il's lifetime, a nuclear power until now. So they have the capabilities of putting an intercontinental ballistic missile together with a nuke on the tip of it. They've been trying to throw these things up in the air. And the way an intercontinental ballistic missile works is it shoots a missile all the way up into the stratosphere. And then as the world turns, which is a very popular soap opera back in my time, once it hits around the American peninsula, it goes right back down. So it saves fuel. It doesn't have to go from North Korea to America. It shoots straight up, waits for the world to turn, and then drops straight down on America. So that's what they've been trying to do. They're coming ever and ever closer to it. They just did a test a couple of weeks ago where they shot one right off of the Isles of Japan. Japan's pretty much an island. And they're doing this so they can get closer to, so they can tell us pretty much that, hey, if you try anything, we're going to shoot you with this ballistic missile that could have a warhead attack. So that's kind of where that ICBM situation comes in. So we're pretty much in a cold war with Kim Jong-il, one of those, you know, emperors of the sun. But with that being said, I shoot back right over to Gigi Luigi, because Gigi, of course, is an ex-Marine. He knows all the linguistics about militarism and those kinds of things. And I don't, of course, because I'm from California for the most part. So I always rely on him to do it. So Gigi, when you were in the military, did you guys ever talk about the North Korean threat, Cold War antics? What did they teach you back then?
So our like training wise was about like fighting in like urban combat, like going house to house, clearing rooms, you know, a lot of EOD training because there's a lot of IEDs. So, or, you know, homemade explosives. So
yeah.
Like that's kind of like where we were like mainly trained towards. However, we did do a lot of conventional warfare training, but a lot of that style and theme of training, you can kind of tell it dates back to like kind of like the between the 40s and the 60s.
Yeah.
Because that's when conventional warfare kind of not died out, but like it became guerrilla warfare after that.
Yeah,
like
we it were changed.
Fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, in against the Viet Cong, it was very guerrilla warfare. Like, mm-hmm. we weren't fighting a military that had planes and airstrikes and tanks and yeah. like that. That so.
And Gigi, you bring up a great point. Guerrilla warfare started in the Congo jungles in Africa 300 years through 400, maybe even 500 years ago. It was perfected by the indigenous peoples of America, North America. And then it got even more fierce with Che Guevara before he transplanted himself in Cuba. So, I mean, you have this escalation, and God, it's such a good thing that we figured this out. We teach this now because there's no army on the face of the earth as supreme as the United States military. There's no one even close, not even China, with all its new naval boats and ships and stuff like that. No one outguns and outmans, well, maybe outmans. North Korea has more actual foot soldiers or boots on the ground than we do, but they're not as precisely and most precision as our military. We have the greatest military in the history of mankind. But guerrilla warfare is huge now, especially when you have terrorists in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and the cliffs and mountains of the Arabian Desert. You have to fight a different kind of war. And I think we're doing that very, very well. But guys, as Gigi told you, this is not an urban conflict. This is a Cold War. So you have missiles pointed at us from maybe four different countries. We're not sure if Iran has a nuclear weapon. We know Russia has thousands of them as well as we do. But if Russia sends one, we send 10. Russia sends 25. We send 1,000. So that's what MAD is. It's mutually assured destruction. Once we feel Russia is in the nuclear game, although we did have treaties with them, we will annihilate them 150 billion%. And that's why you have these things called the nuclear football, where the president holds a briefcase. Well, he doesn't actually hold it. He has his, I think, a sergeant major hold it. And we have 7 minutes, 7 minutes to respond. And God forbid it's the wrong response, because we've had a lot of incidences where it was wrong. And people on the other end found out that it was not a nuclear proliferation, and they stopped it. I don't think we would have. I think that Americanism, allegiance to the flag, these things have gripped us so wholeheartedly that I don't believe we would come back from that. If it was up to us and our generals and majors and the people that decided who's going to swallow a nuke whole, I don't believe we would have pulled back. Gigi, do you think we would have? Because every time in the Bay of Pigs, when Russia brought their submarines and their fighters and their battalions, sea battalions, over to Cuba to load them up with nuclear missiles, I don't believe we would have pulled back. I think that if JFK would have said something different, I don't believe we would have been here. What do you think there, Gigi?
Let me re-clarify the question. Are you saying, like, as if Russia launches a nuke and we retaliate? Like,
yes.
So we definitely would retaliate. If we don't have the ability to just, and like, I know Reagan was playing around with the idea of Star Wars. I don't know if it's operational, if it was failure. I don't know much about it. But the idea it was a failure. Yeah, that's what I've heard. But if we can get something similar to where, like, they do launch a nuke or something along those lines, and we can just shoot it and, like, kind of explode it in the stratosphere.
I love, Gigi, let me just tell you, let me give you props, because I love the fact that you brought up Star Wars. Not because I love the movie and I'm a nerd. I am a nerd.
We are the movie. I love the movie.
But I think you are too, maybe. But Reagan he didn't develop it. He just did it as propaganda. It was a network called Star Wars, where the Russians believed we had satellites aimed at them that when if they would have lopped up nuclear weapons to the skies, we had some outfit of satellites with lasers, with laser beams on their shark heads, if you remember that analogy, that would blow these nukes out of the air over our stratosphere, and we would never get hit with nukes. That was absolutely a falsary. It was a lie. And Reagan never had that technology, but he made the Russians believe that we did. Guys, if a nuclear weapon were disposed of over our heads, the same thing would happen if it landed to the ground. We would be in a shade of darkness for 50 to 100 years of just cloud smoke, and no sun would penetrate. And you know how this goes. It's bad. So either way you slice it, it's not going to be a win for us or Russia, because like Gigi mentioned, we would bombard Russia with all kinds of ICBMs, nuclear weapons. It wouldn't be pretty on either side.
No, it wouldn't. And you got to keep in mind, just going to say this, Yellowstone.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yellowstone.
Yeah. Do you know what Yellowstone is?
No, I don't. I want you to. Yeah.
It's a super volcano.
In Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah. So dropping nukes on that, it's like 10,000 years overdue to explode.
We're waiting for it, like Mount St. Helens back when I was a kid.
So what I'm saying is, you drop a nuke on that, and that's half the U.S. gone right there.
Oh yeah, you're just like, it's like
easy.
Have you ever seen the Pimple Popper? She's a beautiful Asian lady.
No, yeah, Dr. Pimple Popper and like all that stuff. Yeah.
So think of it like this, guys: Yellowstone is a big ass pimple that has not been popped for like 200 years or whatever. It's so past due that the National Geographic or Geological Society is just like, we don't know when it's going to erupt, but it should have erupted 200 years ago. We're just waiting on this thing. So once that bad boy erupts, just say, if for instance, Russia's like, oh, this is our time, let's throw a missile, you know, an ICBM in that pimple. That's going to be the pimple on your ass that's the size of Boston that just decides to erupt all of a sudden. It's going to have all this liquid white nasty goose. And just think of that, like just think of that pimple on the ass of America popping with the Russian needle, which would be an ICBM. Is that kind of what we're saying about it?
To a degree. To a degree. I mean, it definitely would get messy.
It'd be messy.
Anytime I talk about nuclear fallout, that's like, that is my ultimate biggest fear, if something sets off Yellowstone, because like the catastrophic damage that it would cause,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's so weird. And I love the fact
makes me want to move out of Washington State just thinking about it.
Oh, it's right there. It's like, I don't know what you would do. Like, what would you, run? Don't run, because it's not going to matter. You won't be faster than a volcano. It's just going to have gravity. So, and I think a lot of people don't understand or know that that's there and it's ready to rock and roll. It just needs a catalyst. If Russia, and I hate to say it because we do, look, my fellow comrades, we do have Russian listeners. Russian listeners, it is your job to make sure your government, well, we'll just say Putin, doesn't do something stupid. And take what we're saying as a grain of salt. We all have to live. We have generations coming behind us. There are generations ahead of us. Let's not do the wrong movement. But what I will tell you is that right there is mutually assured destruction, 110%. But don't do it, because by the time you figure that out, there'll be like 1,000 missiles headed for every part and every point of Russia. And I guarantee this, because this is what we've been taught since the 50s. Since the nuclear age, you can get on your desk, but we may not survive, but neither will our enemy, and neither will nobody else on the entire planet.
High school had a bomb shelter built into it.
wait. Can you tell, Gigi, the audience doesn't know where you went to high school at, but I love it. Can you tell them where you went?
It's a nice little high school called Bel Air High School. It's in Maryland.
Sultry. Bel Air.
Oh, yeah. So, fun fact, my high school is so old that Mr. John Wilkes Booth himself went to it.
Come on now.
So it's been torn down and rebuilt over the years, but that it dates back all the way to at least John Wilkes Booth.
Let me ask, are you a thespian in the nature of John Wilkes Booth? Are you a disturbed artist who just wants to assassinate the president and Ford's theater? Can we just figure, I know Gigi is not. But it's just super, I mean, it's, I don't know, I'd say funny or amusing.
It's funny. I didn't know that he was from my hometown. I did report on him in, like, the fourth grade, and didn't find out that, like, how do you not know? How do you do a report on somebody you don't know that he's from your hometown?
Look, that's how dumb
I was as a kid. I found out about that. His family home is in my hometown, and I didn't even put that in the report. I was like,
well, you don't have to see your hometown tonight,
he conspired right, with the Queen of England, and he shot Hank Lincoln. Like, that.
And the brains. Yeah. And it wasn't the bullet that killed Lincoln. You guys realize this. It was the doctors digging with their fingers, their Nazi slimy booger-infected fingers, in Lincoln's skull and scraping around to find the bullet that killed Lincoln. Yeah, so there's that. But that's just super crazy, bro. I mean, how do you go to a high school that's probably famous for killing a president?
You know, we're also famous for wrestling, too, so.
I'm sorry. Well, okay, great. Good. That's awesome, guys. It's amazing. We do, like, Greco-Roman wrestling when we're using baby oils from D. Diddy. No, that's fine.
He had plenty to go around.
He bought 1,000 bottles. Look, we're getting off the subject because we both had the...
Anyway, Diddy's in North Korea with baby oil. What?
No,
wait. Wrong video. Sorry.
Let me just tell you, Kim Jong-il looks a little porky. I mean, if you put some, I'm not going to go there because he'll try to get me. I know that fucker would try to get me because of the baby oil. Because he does look like a little piglet.
He's like a little piglet.
You just want to like push him, like ooh, ooh, you know, that thing.
Yeah. I think Diddy was in cahoots with North Korea, Kim Jong-un, or whatever.
Via who? Via Dennis Rodman? Look, Dennis Rodman, we love you.
Was Dennis Rodman on that list?
Bro, it's weird. Huh?
It was Dennis Rodman on that list? Because if he was, I mean, there's... Look,
we don't... Okay, so...
Some research to be done. Guys,
we're not talking about P. Diddy's list. But P. Diddy's list did come out in a portion of it. And there are a lot of names on it that will surprise you that they want to call for. And I think they're just doing this to be grandiose. But a lot of people to attend those parties. And let me just let you know, I was never a P. Diddy. I was never high up in the echelon of partying. But I had some P. Diddy parties now that I think about it. So for everyone, not like that. No. There was no trafficking, no weirdness. But, you know, sometimes you get a little Caligula on a Wednesday night and you got like seven people. Gigi, I can't be the only one because Capini's in it, too.
No.
You ever had any good parties?
I've had plenty of good parties. Had plenty of good parties. But let's get back.
Why is that a thing? Like, why are we being persecuted for the parties we had back in the day? Like, because I had some good parties.
Well, Did he do a little too much there.
I am not a P. Diddy fan, but I will tell you, I love Tupac, I love Biggie, and P. Diddy probably killed them both. Oh, shit, I said it on the radio. No, it's not radio, it's podcasting, so I think you can slide in it. But let's get back to our original topic, because it's weird. So when we say this, guys, we have North Korea, we've got Iran, Syria and China, who are just staring us down a barrel. They even want to do their own, like Euro, their own European crap called BRICS, where it's Brazil, Russia, you've got India, you've got China, and you've got South Africa, BRICS. And their whole thing is they're trying to create an economy just for these states. And now they have more people who are people that you've never heard of in different countries who want to join this thing that makes no sense as to what it does to America. And I'm not an American hawk. And I don't think GG is either, where we're like, America's better than all you bastards. You can try. No, we're not like that. When Nixon took us off the gold standard and opened the doors to China and made the American currency backed by its military, which it is, because if you don't like what America does, it's on you. I would be on the other side of that fence, because I know what the military in America can do to small populations. I mean, we're seeing it right now, and we're not even doing anything in Gaza or in Ukraine. Ukraine's whole military is backed up by us on a Wednesday night. It's not even a Saturday night fight. It's a Wednesday night for us. And we've given them, what, $180 billion? You just don't want to screw with us. And I will tell you this, and Gigi was in the military, and he'll probably confirm this. Our GDP, which is gross domestic product, is nearly $30 trillion, not B, the T, every year. $30 trillion. A big fraction, the most money we spend on anything is pretty much our military. The next person that comes even anywhere near close is the whole European Union, the EU, and they're way down there. And Russia is like number 14, if that. So what I would tell you is, look, if there's a tyrant and you believe America is a tyrant, you know, speak up and say something. We want to know who you are, not because you want to, you know, capitulate and cut your head off. We just want to know if we're doing something wrong. Gigi, is this correct?
Well, yes and no, because like you have a lot of shit going on to like talk about. You have black ops, you have green ops, things that you know people don't talk about, they're not allowed to talk about until like years and years later. There's definitely been proof and evidence of CIA involvement and destabilizing foreign governments to
That's called black flag.
So you know, to destabilize foreign governments, to elect leaders that benefit America's interest. Like, you know, the whole thing with Ukraine, that's been slowly building up since the 90s. You can even go find footage of, like, you know, politicians and trying to think who it was, someone specific, maybe it was like a military member who was like describing what they're doing to Ukraine right now is pretty much like they were
prepping to be their own thing. Like,
they're prepping to bring them into NATO and basically like take it over, but you know, make it like not territory, but like it's own thing. Take it away from Russia.
It's like it's the same thing we did with Israel.
That was a part of like, you know, them
Japan
tearing down the Berlin Wall, was that, you know, NATO wouldn't move past, you know, Germany, I believe. And then they moved past and they were trying to like, they kept moving past and inching and inching. And then
Turkey,
you know, one of the factors for the Soviet Union crushed, folding and disbanding was to leave Ukraine alone. And every president just kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And like, again, like it, you kind of like at some point you got to take responsibility, you know, the American government does. So,
and I understand that.
Yes.
But
So while we might have the top two strongest militaries in the world. Well, number one is the American government. Number two is American public. So, you know, I don't have fear of an actual war coming to the United States.
It'll never happen. The terrain isn't built for it.
It's just, you know, they would have to come in by amphibious assault. So you got to think about like D-Day, things like that. And then you have
the military through Russia and through Canada. Correct. They had to go through Canada first.
Exactly.
And Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah. So like they can come up that way. But again, like, you know, you're going to have to traverse through Mexico and, you know.
Yeah.
Is Mexico going, like their military is definitely not going to help you. I mean, depending on the cartel, who knows.
You're going to be a part of the cartel before you get to America. You're going to cut your head off. No, look, I'm not being racist. I love Mexicans. I'm 1% Mexican somewhere in my body. Someone is doing it. But if you come on the southern border to America and you want to start shit, Mexico is not going to let you get to America because we're their biggest trading partner
If you come upwards towards Canada down, you got to get through Alaska to get to Canada to get to the mainlands. I mean, like Gigi said, you're coming through. Only way you can do it is the amphibious assault route. And I will tell you, everybody in America has a gun that's on the eastern and western seaboard. So good luck getting through. If you get past Watts and Compton, good for you. If you get past Jamaica Town and Brooklyn, good for you. If you get past Florida, wow, you deserve a medal. Because everybody, even the Cubans in Florida are packing.
Come up to Gulf of Mexico and land in Texas.
Ooh, don't do that.
Should do that.
They don't get it. I don't think people understand the gun crisis. If you look at all the gun violence throughout all the major countries, America beats the next country by about 4,000 incidents a month. It's crazy. Like, we'd like to shoot weapons. So what I would tell you is, if you're looking for a fight, come to America. Because we have fight. We are so disillusioned, so straggled, so upset about, you know, our political gains or our withdrawals, whatever it is, that we will shoot you. You can't even DoorDash pizza without getting a gun at the goddamn people. It's getting weird. So yeah, come to America. We got some stuff for you. I mean, am I wrong, DG? Because I'm a liberal Democrat and I'm looking for a gun. I already got my concealed permit. So I will just tell you, you can shoot a nuke. They have NORAD. NORAD can spot that thing 6 minutes into it, 7 minutes. I mean, it's just so odd. Why would you want, to be our friend? There's like 330 to 340 million people here, and nobody less than, I mean, the majority of the median people make about 50,000 to 60,000 US, and they get bored. They just buy guns. Am I wrong?
No. I mean,
it's weird.
The amount of people that I know have not just one gun, but multiple guns. It's not just for home defense, and I don't blame them.
No.
Guns are fun. Yeah. It's cool shit. I'm all about it. But a lot of people have a lot of guns. They have multiple of the same gun. And again,
people have their dream guns they get from pawn shops. It's a lot going on over here.
Yeah, like people just have a lot of guns. Crazy. And it's good. It's good.
Well,
at the end of the day, like, I don't have a fear of America being invaded. I mean, bombed. Yeah, definitely. Maybe like it would have to be through an ICBM. But yeah. Other than that, yeah, there's no one that could, like, I mean, like, again, they can come here and there's going to be a fight, but like
it's gonna be crazy.
Stupid, and they're not going to win.
If you come here to America, and look, guys, we're not grandstanding. We're not telling you. We are completely non-biased. We're American citizens, yeah, but we already know. So you can come here if you want to. I wouldn't do it. It's crazy. But if you come here, expect a surprise. And I think that the world knows a surprise because we have a lot of money. We have nothing really to spend it on except for Amazon, Walmart, and there's a lot of guns. There's like 100 guns to every one person. And I'm not playing. It's a lot. But what I would tell you is that do your research. We are in a existential crisis with four nations. North Korea, China, Syria, and Russia. Those are the only ones that are on our mind. Now, if you're Brazil or Argentina and you just think like, hey, the Americans are predisposed, let's go on. I mean, I would say no, don't do it. We've been looking for a fight since the 80s. That's why there was a Cold War. We were trying to provoke Russia into going all out. They didn't do it. But now with Putin in charge, he wants to make a name for himself, and I feel like he doesn't mind what happens. I don't think he cares 100% about Russia and its citizens. I believe Putin's like, hey, it's all about me. But we would gently remind him who we are for the last 250 years. We love war, and we create the war for other countries. They come to us, then they ask us, how do we create this war? And we tell them, and we fund it, and we get money off of it. That's America. I don't know if that's, do you agree with that? We're the war machine.
Yeah, we are. Our economy is heavily based off of it. You know, industrial military complex is absolutely a thing.
We were warned about this. We were warned by Eisenhower.
Yes.
Beware, and that's a very complex.
And I do hope that, you know, from what I've seen, you know, Trump promote, I hope that he does maintain a promise of, you know, pushing for peace and not furthering wars or anything, because, like, it's just it's like every like rock song or metal song you ever heard, you know, like the politicians get rich and the poor are the ones out there fighting and dying poor over it. So mm-hmm. like it doesn't matter, like they just look at us like pawns, like, well, I'm just gonna send our guys over there and you know. Yeah.
Trump should look. I know
ever since World War II and what we found out what war could do for our economy because of the Great Depression.
It does a lot.
Yeah. Like it's been evolving ever since.
War. Yeah. And look, guys, Americans are not war hungry. We don't want war. But if you want war, we're going to give you a war. And it's going to be a war that you won't recover from for many, many generations. I don't think there's a war we've ever been in, even Vietnam, or which they say we didn't win, but we did. Because look where Vietnam is right now compared to where it was before we went to war with them. So that's the outcome. We may not claim victory, but in this instance, we don't really have to, because the detriment to your economy, to your people, to everything you live for and you stand for will be absolute. So with that being said, I would tell you, avoid war. War is horrible, and we don't love it. But if you entice us to get into one, we will bankroll off of it. And we will be the winner in that situation where it comes to finances. Because that's what America, we will stock that war. And then we will go on our New York exchange, and we will bid on it. And now we have apps where they'll say, who do you think is going to win the war? And we'll bid on that too. That's America. It's capitalist. So now we've heard it said that history repeats itself, but this isn't just a repeat. It's an escalation. Unlike the ideological Cold War of the past, we're seeing cyber warfare, economic sanctions, ballistic missile threats, an all new level of hybrid warfare. And just this week, Kim Jong-un launched two new ballistic missiles aimed toward Japan, spiking regional tensions. And then we have the Israelis and their airstrikes, and they're surging in Gaza as Hamas rockets continue to target southern Israel. Meanwhile, in Russia, we have intensified operations in Ukraine, with North Korea reportedly deploying troops to support Russian forces as the Geneva Convention is tested by modern conflicts. We have to ask, does it still hold relevance? So, Gigi, I know being in the military, they did teach you about the Geneva Convention. Do you think it's still relevant to this very day?
Is it relevant? I would say yes, that's relevant. Yeah.
Is that our guidebook? Do we always go back to that threshold, the Geneva Convention?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely try to like actually follow the Geneva Convention. We're not out there like using illegal weapons or inhumane operations. I mean, technically, I committed a war crime myself.
Okay, we don't want to impugn you.
It was on the global
radio.
Yeah, so it was in training. No one was hurt. No one was injured.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't know. I was like, you know, part of the mortar platoon, and we were dropping smoke rounds. So we would drop it, and the smoke is phosphorus. So, So if you drop an HE round inside of a smoke cluster, it'll ignite the smoke and turn into a giant fireball, like a disco inferno, baby.
Flame on.
So it's called a shake and bake. So I did that on accident. But the thing is, like, I was told to drop the rounds. I was just, you know, doing what I was told. So, like,
right.
I was just the vessel that the war crime was committed through. But again, it was just in training. Nobody was injured. It was just,
yeah, you won't go to a military tribunal and be like, they told me to do it. They're like, okay, buddy, you know how this works. Yeah.
I didn't even know. Like I dropped the HE round and they were like, huh. I was like, what? And there was like, you just technically committed a war crime. It's like, what'd I do? And then that's when they explained it to me. I didn't know beforehand. I was like, okay, I'll drop fire mission, yeah, drop the HE round. Okay, say less. Here goes the round.
Are there women and children? Are there civilians? This is a war. There's a lot of rules to war on our side. And we, as Americans, American soldiers, try to follow the rules as perceived by the charters, the Geneva Convention, NATO realization, the United Nations, all that stuff. We won't go to war with you and cheat. We want to win right, the fair way. We don't do that extra shit. But when you figure it out, you almost committed a war that you probably did in training. Commit a war crime. What did you feel like? What happened? What was the situation like? They say, "Hey, buddy,
like while I was in Afghanistan."
Yeah,
I mean, it just wasn't tolerated.
Yeah,
if you even shot off your flare to warn somebody that you were about to fire, you better have a damn good explanation. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's just how my command was. I can't speak for every command out there. That's just how my command was. It did make things difficult, and definitely you're definitely terrified and like more like, you know, checking your P's and Q's there, looking around, because like you only have a split second to decide, like, is this vehicle going to ram into my vehicle and explode? So I got to pop a pin flare to warn it, because it's quite often that, you know, the sun could just be in their eyes and they just don't see our brown trucks in the brown sand. So
yeah,
so you pop a pin flare to warn them. And, you know, then you only have a couple seconds to decide, well, open fire, you know, so like, it's terrible and it's terrifying. And like, nobody wants to be the one that accidentally guns down like a family. You just blatantly could not see you. And, you know, you pop the pin flare and your son's in their eyes. They can't even see the flare. Like, nobody wants to be in that situation.
But it gunning does, that it does there's people down. Often, though.
Happens. I wouldn't say it happens often.
Well, but I mean, if we're talking about
situations that happen in war, just in general, you know,
Gaza is going through it right now with Israel. Although Israelis are not American troops, they still should follow the same rules of engagement that we do under the Geneva Convention, and they're not. It's genocide. Well,
yeah, I can't really speak for them. I can only speak for the Marines I served with. Yes.
I wouldn't ask you to. You're right.
Yeah, but no, that it just wasn't tolerated. Like,
yeah.
I remember getting in conversation, people yelling at me, like, you know, like random activists back home in America who's never, you know, stepped foot outside the States, condemning me, being like, you know, you're a rapist and blah, 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 blah. Like, first and foremost, yesterday, I helped build, like, we didn't help, but we provided security for them, like, to build schools and, you know, I think a hospital or something like that. Like we were out there providing security so that these things get done without Taliban or like interference, you know?
Right.
Like, we didn't even look at the women. We weren't allowed to. We were given classes. I mean, they're
pretty women though.
Yeah. Like we were given like strict classes on like what to do and what not to do. We are taught to be very respectful because the mission is not necessarily to fight the Taliban. It's to win the hearts and the minds of the people so that they stop joining the Taliban, so that they help us find the Taliban, so that they give us the information we need, because that's what's going to beat the Taliban. So, so that's, it blows, like, in reality, again, my brothers and everything, we weren't really, I don't think we actually committed a single, like, war crime. Like, we didn't kill a single...
That's amazing, because it does happen. There are people who go across the grain. You know that. Yeah. But, I mean, if we talk about the origins and the evolution, the Geneva Convention was established in 1949, and it was meant to lay down rules to protect civilians, prisoners, and wounded soldiers during wartime. Fast forward to today, and the stakes are rising in ways we've never foresaw. Ukraine and Russia, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has led to massive casualties. Over 500,000 Ukrainian and Russian troops are estimated to have died or been injured in the conflict as to date, while civilian casualties have soared, with over 9,600 documented deaths, including nearly 500 children just in that conflict alone. Now, if we move forward to Iran, Israel, and the Gaza conflict, Israel's ongoing operation in Gaza, which has resulted in over 10, no, it's way more than that. We're nearing 50,000 reported Palestinian casualties, has spurred wider regional tensions. Iran is a key player in this, both openly backing Hamas and using Hezbollah in Lebanon as a proxy force, with recent missile exchanges across the Israel-Lebanon border. And then you have the Shiites, I don't know if they're Shiites or Sunni, that are in the Black Sea. Do you know what they're seeing? If they're Shiites or Sunni? I forget. Either way.
Yeah,
they're doing all kinds of stuff in the Black Sea. And then you have North Korea. A couple of weeks ago, alone, North Korea has tested 2 long-range ballistic missiles, reportedly capable of reaching the U.S. shores, heightening alarm across South Korea and Japan. Meanwhile, North Korea's alliance with Russia grows stronger, with reports of North Korean soldiers already stationed in Russia, occupying eastern Ukraine. And guys, this isn't just a couple of soldiers. We're talking tens of thousands of soldiers, where we need to do, and look, DZ, what do you think about this? How do we respond to North Korea's threat? Because they have put boots on the ground in Ukraine, which everybody promised, including stupid-ass Putin, that we would not do. And we've done it. Well, he did it. How do we respond to it?
That's tough. Because, like, what do you do? Do you go into the war, drag NATO into it? Do you try to, like, settle things with North Korea by meeting with them? What's going on with Putin? Like, there's so many...
Well, Putin, look, here's the guys, Putin is a dictator. He does not care. He is an oligarch, which means Putin has billions and billions and billions of it. If you guys say that Elon Musk is the richest man in the world, one more time, I'm going to vomit. It's not Elon Musk. It's Putin. He takes money from the actual state of Russia. So he's got Baltic mansions and this, that, and the other thing. This guy has billions and billions and billions of dollars, right? So what is he trying to defend? Russia? No, it's called a land grab. He wants to go into Ukraine. He wants to go into the Baltic states. He wants to take back land that the USSR had before it collapsed in the 90s. He's super authoritarian, but he's old school. Think Stalin. So if you look at this, guys, now we need to examine the major players on this plane. There's one side. We have NATO and the UN, which is backed by the Americans, us, led by President Joe Biden, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, and the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, tasked with upholding international law. They find themselves facing perhaps the greatest challenge since World War II. On the other side, we have the so-called Axis of Chaos. We've got Vladimir Putin, which has expanded Russia's military actions in Ukraine using hybrid tactics, cyber attacks, and energy blackmail to destabilize Europe. You have Xi Jinping of China recently consolidating power, supporting Russia and asserting claims over Taiwan and the South China Sea, further antagonizing Western allies. You got Kim Jong-un, who believes he's a god or deity. He's a little fat piglet, so I'm not sure how that works out. Has launched 28 missiles so far in 2024 alone, the highest number of tests on record for that country, and is now reportedly dispatching troops to aid Russia in Ukraine, and which we can see. Then you have the Iran supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, which continues to fuel regional conflict by supporting military groups in Gaza and Lebanon. So for me, what I'm thinking is, do we just go all out war? Do we go World War III? What do we do? There's a lot of them against this.
I mean, it does. What do we do?
Do we go to World War III? I mean, should we?
It's going to happen. No, it's going to happen. Like, that's not what we should do, but that's what's going to happen. And, you know,
but we're well equipped. We've been waiting for this.
We are well equipped. We need strong leadership to basically, you know, utilize our assets to basically as deterrents. You know, we have to pull our strong hand. Like, hey, motherfuckers, like, we're
deadly serious. We're deadly serious.
Yeah, but to say it's like, you know, we really could have taken out Osama bin Laden a lot sooner. We definitely could have been way more efficient with our military. I think, you can say you don't like him, whatever, you know, but, you know, look what Trump did with ISIS. He said that he was going to have him beat in a couple months and he had him beat in a couple weeks.
ISIS is already on the last leg.
But still, like,
no.
He did have that meeting with, I think it was like the Taliban leader, where he's pretty much just put down the picture of his house and was just like, and the guy was like, what is this for? And he goes, you find out, you better not kill any more Americans. And then we had 18 months without any deaths.
Look, I know there's a segment of the population, a huge segment, because it just reelected this guy, that love Trump because he's machismo, he's macho, blah, blah, blah. But Trump used those things to his advantage. And this is what I believe. And, you know, Gigi's a little different than that. He believes in something a little different. But let me just say, these leaders aren't just shaping the narrative. They're actively testing the limits of international law and the Geneva Convention. So here's the question. Is the Geneva Convention a set of treaties created in the aftermath of World War II still relevant? NATO maintains its commitment to these principles, but does playing by the rules disadvantage the alliance in a world where the opposition shows no such restraint? Because Iran, Russia, I mean, Russia's got North Korean troops. You're not supposed to add people to a war. That's a part of the Geneva Convention. You've got Iran, who's shooting missiles at another country unprovoked, because they have proxy terrorist groups fight the battles for them. You've got Kim Jong-un shooting ICBMs to see how close he can get to America and its allies. And then you've got like places like China, who was trying to figure out how to get a war started with Taiwan. So they're not necessarily, they are not playing by the rules. Gigi, I ask you, should we be playing by their rules or the rules that are set up by the Geneva Convention? Or should we just leave it alone and go 100% attack?
Well, I don't believe, and I might be corrected, I don't think Russia, or is either Russia or North Korea, fall into the Geneva Convention. Like, they don't follow it, like, just straight up.
They don't, not, that's our guideline.
That's our guideline, but that's, they're not a part of it. Like,
no, they're not. Neither is Israel.
If we break the Geneva Convention, we're getting sued. That's how that works. You know, America has to basically cover for like the damages and like front it to the other country type of thing. If I'm not mistaken. I don't believe that we need to like even necessarily resort to that. To be completely honest with you. Well, when you look at like how Russia, when they went into Ukraine, like, yeah, they have an overwhelming amount of people, but like, our equipment over Russian equipment, and we've been fighting over there for a very long time. So while Russia was using tactics from like World War II, yeah, we use some tactics that still to this day that are effective, but we've also adapted and evolved over the years. So our technology beats them in that sense. Our training beats their troops in that sense, you know.
We beat everybody's troops.
Yeah. So it comes down to what exactly? Like, it comes down to conventional warfare on the ground, we beat them. And the only thing that they can do is bomb us to hell, and we'll just bomb them to hell back.
Well, and that's the thing, and I get what you're saying, but maybe it's time for NATO to fight fire with fire. If the opposition is willing to ignore the rules to get what they want, should NATO consider adopting its approach with Kim Jong-un launching missiles and Putin bringing North Korea soldiers into Ukraine? It's worth asking, does a moral stance alone still hold weight in modern warfare? Why aren't we all over this?
I think that we should be the ones that hold our ground with the Geneva Convention, you know, stand on principle. Okay. Because at the end of the day, if we're going to be the police in the world, we have to stand on the what's right and be the example. If we're breaking the rules, then other people are going to break the rules, and it's just going to completely devalue the whole point. So while we might be able to, you know, afford the damage that we cause, it's just overall better for the health of the world mentally, like through alliances and spiritually, if America keeps their hands clean. And honestly, we can keep our hands clean and just overwhelm with our overwhelming force and whatnot.
Oh, okay. So I see what you're saying, but
that's what I'm saying. I don't think we need to cheat, and I think we'll still dominate.
I don't know if it's be called cheating. We're getting on mark. So let me ask you this. And I mean, if we're saying that, let's raise this question. Let's get into the future implications of these developments. If these confrontations escalate into all-out war, we could see a breakdown of the Geneva Convention in its entirety and the normalization of unrestricted warfare, 100%. Civilian populations already suffering could face unthinkable human rights abuses, which they already do. Nuclear conflict is a growing concern. Putin has hinted at deploying tactical nukes, and as tension grows, the use of such weapons could spark a chain reaction. What do you think? So if Putin starts throwing tactical nukes at Ukraine, what's our reaction? You were in the military, Gigi. What say you?
I don't know. Me being in the military, I don't think that necessarily opens the perspective of what to do in that situation. Like, what does America do?
Why not?
What do we do? Do you send troops over there to fight someone else's battle? Like, you know, there's a lot of other, in my opinion, there's a lot of other things that are important in the world. And yes, it sucks and it's terrible, but there's also millions upon millions of people in America, like, dying. And I believe our focus should be more on that. Then
America's beautiful about that. We love it.
But we, like, so Ukraine gets tactically nuked. Do we send troops over there? Are they going to get tactically nuked? Do we nuke Russia and start the whole thing?
I think that we don't send our own troops, but you know we have robotics. You know we have drones. You know we have allies that are itching. I mean, one of the most heaviest boots on the ground is South Korea, and they normally don't get involved in other people's wars. But at this time, their main enemy is North Korea, and North Korea is already over there. So what do? Just sit on their hands? NATO and the U.S. intelligence agencies are increasingly concerned about cyber attacks from Russia and North Korea, operatives targeting critical infrastructure in the U.S. and in Europe. We have economic warfare. Sanctions are increasingly aggressive, with the West targeting Russia's oil exports and China imposing trade restrictions in retaliation, but Russia sends their oil to India, and we don't have a real treaty with India. And then you have these nuclear threats. North Korea has stated it's prepared to defend Russia and Ukraine, and both Russia and North Korea have touted their nuclear arsenals as deterrents. The stakes have never been higher for diplomatic intervention, yet the credibility of the UN is also in the line as Security Council deadlock continues due to vetoes from China and Russia. And I won't tell you this, but you already know, America is helping with that with Israel by not checking Israel in the way they're doing genocide over there in the Middle East. So with that all being said, I mean, it's a tricky situation. I hope the president-elect is armed and ready to engage in these situations. Because if he isn't, if he keeps promoting these charitable cases to his to his cabinet, we're going to be in a situation where we got people like Gates in charge of the Secretary of State, or no, in charge of being Attorney General. You've got Kristi Noem in charge of Homeland Security. I mean, all these appointments are completely laughable. He's appointing people that are completely unserious in a very serious time. So with that, what do we do to kind of curtail where we're at? Because where we're at now is the verge of becoming a World War III instead of just a Cold War II. GG.
Well, I believe it is inevitable at this point. I think, eventually tensions are going to just erupt and conflict upon conflict, and we will eventually get dragged into it. At that point, he's the commander in chief, the current sitting president at the time of all this going on. I don't know when it's going to happen. But at the same time, it's his responsibility to listen to the professionals, the military leaders who will be advising him and where to go, and then just use their guidance and with the insight and perspective of foreign affairs that they wouldn't have, to keep in mind where to go and make adjustments off that. With that you can appoint anybody else doing anything, but as long as the leader follows the military professionals and listens to, top generals and, the professionals, then we're going to win. We'll be fine. But with that being said, don't want there to be war. Don't want people to die. War sucks. It's terrifying. There's nothing great about it. Yeah. But no. I think regardless of what happens, whoever's the leader wants America to win, he's just going to listen to the military, and the military get us home, get us to the other side.
Well, we hope so, but we've lived through a Trump presidency, and his big war was COVID, and he lost. So hopefully the next big war, which will be coming, he won't lose, but he has to put the right people in charge of the right places and not just his cronies and proxies. But guys, look, the higher point today, our takeaway, is we are at a crossroads, just like Gigi said. If Cold War II escalates to World War III, the Geneva Convention, NATO, and the UN must either adapt or be relegated to the past. The world order we've known since 1945 is on the brink of irreversible change, whether it be good change or bad change. And unfortunately, our president-elect does not give credence to NATO and barely gives credence to the UN. He tried to dismantle and disembark from NATO in 2016. So hopefully his mindset has changed, and he believes that the seriousness of being the president of the United States is there for him. And it's not some kind of game where you can place your best friends and loyalists in key positions. But as a conclusion, I myself, Mr. Villain, will state this. We're going to wrap this up, folks. The global stage is more tense than it's ever been, with nations ready to push boundaries like never before. This isn't just geopolitics. It's about the future of international law and human rights. I, of course, am Mr. Villain, reminding you that while the Geneva Convention may be our moral compass, its relevance is only as strong as those willing to uphold it. So stick around for Gigi Luigi's closing remarks on this subject and what we're going to be looking forward to next in our political ideologue. So, Gigi, you want to wrap it up and let us know what you believe as we conclude this segment on Let Me Take You Higher?
I believe that the world is in a state of healing. It's in a state of healing. It needs to enter a state of healing. I believe that, unfortunately, things are going to get worse before they get better. I think Cold War II will turn into Cold War III. It's scary because those kind of things are so chaotic. I mean, look at just dating back, like, I always loved doing like this, like, walk back.
Yeah.
All the shit we're facing now all started, and I believe in 1914, I believe.
Okay.
Where
the First World War around that area. Yeah.
Well, it was, you know, Franz Ferdinand, the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand,
yeah,
which, you know, caused tensions in Europe to, you know, explode, causing World War One, which, it was a black, you know, flag.
I would say that was,
yeah, a black
flag. Yeah.
Was, and, you know, because of World War One, you know, Germany felt, you know, got hit with all that debt and everything, and
yeah,
that's what put them in the
position.
Yeah. That's what, you know, put Hitler in the position to gain power, which, you know, started World War II, and then World War II started the first Cold War, which is all, right, the tension that we fought with Vietnam, Korea, mm-hmm, in the 50s and the 60s and 70s, right, which, you know, the tensions with Russia during the Cold War is also what started problems in the Middle East with, you know, Operation, yep, Desert Storm, and like it all just starts in 1914 with the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
It's
crazy because, like, that one incident, you don't know what this is going to turn into be.
And we've been literally fighting wars ever since until this particular break, where Biden brought the troops. However you believe Biden brought the troops home, whether you like the way he did it or didn't, there's no clean way to leave a war. Okay, left all of our military stuff. Okay, I get it, but what are we supposed to do? Go there and pick it up with, what, aircraft carriers? No, I mean, that's old technology. It's not going to be useful for anybody but the Taliban. And always remind yourself, the person that dealt with the Taliban and wanted them to come and negotiate at Camp David, which is a presidential retreat, was Trump. And the Taliban is still listed as a terrorist organization. But we won't get into that. That's for another episode. Guys, thank you for joining us and Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. My name is Mr. Villain. I've been graciously joined by my co-host, Gigi Luigi. If you want to hear any episodes from us, follow the links in our bio. We have over 50 episodes at this point about various topics, because we're a topical conversation piece with our podcast. But let me just tell you, we like to thank all of our sponsors and people who really back us up and take care of us on the back end. And also all of you, our constant audience that, you know, devolves and eats up and digests all of our beautiful podcast. Anywho, thank you so much. We appreciate you, and we'll keep providing you with the best that we can. Knowledge-based interfaces where you can link, correspond, and share. And we appreciate it. You can always reach us at www.letmetakeyouhigherpodcast@gmail.com. And we're also located at www.letmetakeyouhigher.com. That's our website. And anything else you guys need from us, just reach out, let us know, and we'll get right back in touch with you. We love you guys. Thank you so much, and have a great and spectacular day.
They're watching our every move. Iran, Russia, China, North Korea, ISIS, Al-Qaeda. They may be watching this right now. We don't care what you look like. We don't care who you voted for, who you worship, what you worship, who you love. It doesn't matter if your dad left you millions when he died or if you knew who your father was. We have been honed into a machine of lethal moving parts that you would be wise to avoid if you know what's good for you. We will not be intimidated. We will not back down. We've seen war. We don't want war. But if you want war with the United States of America, there's one thing I can promise you, so help me God. Someone else will raise your sons and daughters.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. Big thanks to our special guests, and a huge shout out to our incredible sponsors. You guys are literally the wind beneath our podcast wings. Remember, this show was dreamed up and brought to life by yours truly, Mr. Villain, and it's all made possible by BC Entertainment LLC, a proud subsidiary of Big Cheddar Music LLC. All rights are reserved by BC Entertainment, so don't even think about touching that dial without permission. Until next time, keep your minds elevated and your vibes higher. This is Mr. Villain signing off. Stay tuned, stay sharp, and stay forever gifted and lifted.
Stories unfold.